Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, January 16th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe is expected back in the country anytime now from his holiday in the Far East, and party insiders are warning of another cabinet shakeup and crackdown on his opponents.
When you challenge the top because of the power that is given the office, there's no way you can get away with it. Because now you've created a very strong dictatorship. It's their own fault.
Movement for Democratic Change founding President Morgan Tsvangirai is expected to hold a meeting with provincial party members in Harare tomorrow to discuss issues affecting Zimbabwe.
Basically, President Tsvangirai would use this opportunity to explain to the leaders of MDC in Harare province the national crisis and what we as the MDC plan to do.
And Acting Environment Minister Walter Mzembe invites a James Bond star to Zimbabwe following his discontent over baby elephant exports.
President Robert Mugabe is expected back in the country anytime from now from his holiday in the Far East, and party insiders are warning of another cabinet shakeup and crackdown on his opponents. Addressing party members in his Midlands province, Acting Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa warned the party members allegedly defying ZANU-PF directives that they will be axed. Multiple party sources told Studio 7 that Mr. Mugabe's cabinet reshuffle will target Defence Minister Sydney Sekeramai and Education Minister Lazarus Dokora, among other ministers, deputy ministers and permanent secretaries. Some members of parliament are being targeted for recall.
Our party sources are also warning of a crackdown and invasions of party farms and properties owned by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and their alleged backers. The two factions are trading barbs after it emerged that those linked to Mrs. Mujuru have approached lawyers to challenge the party's December Congress, calling it unconstitutional. The war of words during Mr. Mugabe's absence has also escalated between those backing Mr. Mnangagwa and those backing ousted Mrs. Mujuru. The Herald quotes Mr. Mnangagwa attacking Mutasa as delusional. Mr. Mutasa is ZANU-PF's former Secretary for Administration for challenging the outcome of the Congress. Party political commissar Xavier Kasukwere chillingly warned Mutasa, saying, and I quote, "If you want to take us head on, we are up to the challenge." He added that, quote, "He will retire in pieces."
In an interview with Studio 7, expelled party spokesman Rugare Gumbo accused Mnangagwa of using undemocratic means to deal with opponents. Efforts to get a comment from Mutasa, Mnangagwa and Kasukwere were futile as their phones were switched off. Party spokesman Simon Kayamoyo said he will issue a full statement next week since he is on leave. Political analyst and expelled ZANU-PF member Margaret Dongo told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that she is not surprised by the friction in the party.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because, in fact, what has happened in Tata's case, while it was a noble idea for him to come up with the statement, but he definitely knew the consequence, and I want to believe he was prepared for it. He was one of those people who put that policy in place. They first expelled together from the party for saying his peace of mind and for saying things that haunted ZANU-PF 10 years after. And the second person to be expelled was Margaret Dongo. And they said she's a sellout. Mutasa is now joining the boat of sellouts because he has also been expelled. But anyway, the lesson to learn for both of them is that when you are in power, life is like a circle. What goes around comes around. So when they are putting policies, they should not look at personalities. They should look at the society as a whole. In the event that the thing turn around, what will happen to me? What they forget is that they developed a structure that was undemocratic, that they cannot even break through, and that was their mistake.
We also understand that there will be a mini cabinet reshuffle when Mr. Mugabe comes back. What is your take on this?
If there is going to be a further reshuffle, oh my God, I welcome it. And I still insist, I welcome it. Because 30 years after independence, we can't have the same people being recycled.
That was veteran politician Margaret Dongo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Movement for Democratic Change founding President Morgan Tsvangirai is expected to hold a meeting with his party's provincial party members in Harare tomorrow to discuss issues affecting the country. MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu says Mr. Tsvangirai will meet with the Harare members at the showgrounds Rajiv Gandhi Hall to discuss ways of curbing ongoing company closures, lack of jobs, and the general state of the economy. Gutu tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the party leader will also focus on a proposed all-stakeholders national consultation meeting designed to tackle the country's social, economic, and political challenges.
We are expecting no less than 7,000 people to throng the showgrounds. Basically, President Tsvangirai will use this opportunity to explain to the leaders of MDC in Harare province the national crisis and what we as the MDC plan to do, or what we are now calling Agenda 2015. You will also use this opportunity to explain and interact with the structures, advising them that as the country's biggest and most popular political party, the MDC is going to play a very prominent role in the convening of the proposed National Convergence Conference. And he will also take this opportunity to explain to the activists of Harare province that the National Convergence Conference is not an MDC platform as such, but it is a platform for all players in their diversity in Zimbabwe.
Now, talking about the economy, is it a question of talking about the economy, of taking some action to rectify what is going on? Speaking in public, does it change anything?
It does change, because it is not just going to be a talk shop, Gibbs. This is an opportunity for President Tsvangirai to roll out the national campaign to say, look, as the MDC, we are pushing ahead with our national and global campaign to engage the SADC, to engage the AU, and to ensure that all the electoral reforms that we have been calling for are put in place, to also ensure that all the security sector reforms and the media reforms that we have been clamoring for ever since the MDC was formed are put into place. And he will advise and explain to the multitudes that are going to gather at the Rajiv Gandhi Hall tomorrow morning.
That was MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. The World Bank has projected that Zimbabwe's economy is likely to grow by about 3.2% this year.
A special invitation to Hollywood star James Bond from Acting and Environment Minister Walter Mzembe. Please come visit Zimbabwe, where men, flora and fauna exist peacefully. This comes after the animal rights activist Pierce Brosnan, who has formerly played fictitious character James Bond, criticized Zimbabwe last week for selling baby elephants to China and other Asian markets. Brosnan joined other environmentalists in calling for Zimbabwe to stop selling elephants by saying they are an endangered species. But Mzembe tells Ntungamili Nkomo there is no going back on selling the elephants, adding Zimbabwe has even exported animals to countries like the United States.
The zoos in Texas, San Diego, in the United States, carry our rhino seed stock, which we shipped there a couple of years ago, decades ago. Have what we thought was species under threat. Now, when we do a similar thing, again supervised under international statutes, the likes of CITES, and start trading with the East countries like China, UAE, then get surprised when other markets cry foul. and they cry foul at a time when elephant trophy hunting is banned by an executive order that was issued by President Obama. Then we say, you can't have your cake and eat it too. We need to raise money for conservation, sustainable conservation management in Zimbabwe. But I want to use your platform, Studio 7, to actually extend an invitation to all those lobby groups that are trying to undo our destination to visit Zimbabwe, so we can take them through the entire value chain, them to understand that everything that we do, that area is above the law. I observed that James Bond was roped in as much as other prominent personalities to amplify this message against the sale of live animals. And I would like to invite him to also visit Zimbabwe and begin to speak the truth.
How many elephants have you sold so far, and how much have you got?
Nothing has been yet transacted. We are still at a stage where patients are being done, which have passed the test. And that information is basically administrative. It will be released in due course of time.
That was Acting Environmental Minister Walter Mzembe on the line with Ntungamile Nkomo from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up,
a closer look at operations of non-governmental organizations in Zimbabwe.
But first, Jonga, we take a look at regional and international news.
A convoy of Chadian tanks and armored vehicles motored out of the capital Friday to help fight the Nigerian insurgent group Boko Haram. The convoy left N'Djamena soon after Chad's parliament voted to send troops into nearby Cameroon, whose forces have clashed repeatedly with the militants.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has paid tribute to the victims of last week's terrorist attacks in France, calling the shootings cowardly and despicable. He spoke at a ceremony at the Paris City Hall today after he laid wreaths at the site of the shootings by Islamic militants that took 17 lives over 3 days. One of those sites was near the offices of the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, where two gunmen killed 12 people in an attack.
A Democratic Republic of Congo official says the presidential poll scheduled for 2016 could be delayed a year. Government spokesman Lambert Mende told Radio France International on Friday that the election could take place in 2016 or it could take place in 2017. Opposition parties have accused President Joseph Kabila of trying to extend his term through a proposed law that would require completion of a national census before elections are held.
And German police say they've arrested two men in Berlin on suspicion they were recruiting fighters for the Islamic State group in Syria. Police say the men were detained today in a series of raids by more than 200 police officers on more than a dozen properties, most of them in the German capital. The group's leader, identified only as 41-year-old Ismet D, in accordance with privacy laws, is suspected of organizing the group of largely Turkish and Russian nationals to fight against the so-called infidels in Syria. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Southern African Development Community health ministers today participated in commemorations of the SADC Malaria Day held in Victoria Falls. At the commemorations held at Monde Primary School, Zimbabwe Health Minister Dr. David Parenyatwa outlined the achievements made against the illness and pushed for partnerships within the region. The theme of this year's Malaria Day was Strong Partnerships Sustain Gains in Malaria Control. The SADC ministers were meeting in the resort town to review progress in the implementation of regional policies and programs for addressing public health issues in the region. In a joint meeting yesterday, the ministers noted that the SADC region continues to experience a huge burden of communicable diseases, namely HIV and AIDS, TB and malaria. They noted, though, the declines in new HIV infections in 8 member states between 2001 and 2011, with South Africa, Swaziland and Mozambique recording a decline of over 50%. The ministers also noted the burden of TB within the region, while acknowledging achievements made in diagnostic and provision of TB treatment. The ministers endorsed the World Health Organization's decision of strengthening health care systems in the continent through universal health coverage as a flagship of health care reform.
Speakers of minority languages in Zimbabwe say they are still waiting for the deployment of qualified teachers to enable the teaching of these languages in primary schools. This follows the introduction of a series of Tonga textbooks for both primary and secondary education, the Chitonga Bwanachilo and Lumusuko series. Observers say they are hoping that the government is working on doing the same for other minority languages. The Minister of Primary and Secondary Education is already offering a course on minority languages for teacher trainees in Sesotho, Chivenda, and Chikalanga at the Joshua Nkabuko Polytechnic, but there is an acute shortage of reading material in these languages.
Traditional leaders say there is nothing tribal about the teaching of minority language, as people need to reclaim their languages, which carry their cultures and value systems. There are 16 official languages in Zimbabwe, up from 3 before the adoption of a new constitution. These are Chewa, Chibarwe, English, Kalanga, Khoisan, Nambia, Ndau, Ndebele, Shangaan, Shona, Sign Language, Soto, Tonga, Tswana, Venda, and Xhosa.
In this second edition of a discussion on the role of non-governmental organizations in strengthening democracy in Zimbabwe, top activists say funding has an impact on the social, economic, and political transformation of any nation. Speaking at a conference in Washington, D.C., organized jointly by the National Endowment for Democracy and the Robert F. Kennedy for Human Rights and Justice, Arthur Gwagwa of the Zimbabwe Human Rights Forum and Jeffrey Smith of the Robert F. Kennedy Center say foreign governments should fund civil society without interfering with most processes in a nation. Smith tells Marvelous Mtlanganyawie lack of funding is affecting some programs in Zimbabwe.
One unfortunate phenomenon in the past few years has been a decrease in funding for democracy and governance work in Zimbabwe, especially since its heyday in 2007 and 2008. And we've really seen a lack of technical capacity building for civil society, and we've really seen their work regress in a number of ways. The civil society currently in Zimbabwe is lacking the skills to do policy oversight and policy development. There's a lack of a constitutional watchdog. Zimbabwe has a great constitution, but it's not being put into practice. And I think local governance is key. There's a lack of relationship between citizens and their elected officials. And people aren't seeing the link between the lofty rhetoric that we speak about human rights and democracy and how it might affect their ordinary lives in terms of clean drinking water, in terms of electricity and access to basic services. And I think those are the voids that need to be filled.
Why has U.S. funding dried up for the civil society in Zimbabwe?
Unfortunately, in the United States right now, and this is one of my big disappointments with the current administration, is that Africa is not and never really has been high on their priority list. Certain issues have been, certainly issues of security, issues of counterterrorism, but my main qualm with all of that is that the United States, unfortunately, in terms of our Africa policy, if you could say we even have one, which I would argue that we don't, that the few remnants of the policy we have continues to address the symptoms of political, social, and humanitarian instability, unrest, and crises. We're not addressing a fundamental lack of human rights, corruption, and transparency, issues of good governance, discrimination against marginalized groups, which left to fester over years and years is inevitably going to lead to social unrest. So if we're going to say the Obama administration has an Africa legacy, the one key initiative that people will point to is Power Africa, which is a public-private partnership. It's providing electricity to a handful of countries in Africa, important countries including Nigeria and Liberia and others. But the money to fund that initiatives being taken out of the United States' democracy and governance budget, which is already less than 1% of the overall foreign affairs budget, which is a pittance. And I think that the second key issue there is that there's a competition for resources. And the United States is investing heavily in its military involvement in Africa through AFRICOM. And I think issues of human rights and good governance are certainly losing out to that, unfortunately, again. And I think it goes back to addressing symptoms, not causes. The causes being lack of respect and fundamental widespread violation of human rights in Zimbabwe and in elsewhere. I think Zimbabwe, besides South Africa, I would argue is the most important country in all of Southern Africa. I think if tide starts to turn in Zimbabwe, you'll see a ripple effect through the entire region. Unfortunately, policymakers here are not seeing that. And if they do, they're not doing much to invest.
And Mr. Gwagwa, your take on what Mr. Smith just said?
Certainly, I think I want to see the U.S. supporting democracy work in Zimbabwe, but not only financially, but also technically. There are two models, you know, for funding. The independent funding model, where the U.S. government, you know, gives money to foundations like, you know, National Endowment for Democracy, or they can directly fund in the country, which is the field-based model. So I think I would advise, I think the U.S. government, I think, to fund organizations like, you know, NAND, the RFK Center, and then they enter into partnerships with local organizations because they have a better understanding of the obtaining, you know, conditions in the country. Secondly, in terms of the skill base, I know there are a lot of Zimbabweans who have gone abroad. Some of them were founding members of Zimbabwe civil society. Like I could talk of, you know, Brian Kagoro, Depros Muchena, you know, Kevin Lowe, and a few others. Like, you know, Tawanda Wondera, you know, deputy director within Amnesty International. Why can't we tap into the knowledge base of those Zimbabweans? And then, of course, work with our partners. But in order for them to give us support, I think they also wanted to see a commitment among Zimbabweans, I think, to be finding solutions.
That was Arthur Gwagwa, a Reagan Fasel Democracy Fellowship in Washington and a London-based head of the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum. You also heard the views of Jeffrey Smith of the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Human Rights and Justice. They spoke with Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye.
And now an editorial reflecting the views of the U.S. government.
We are beginning to see signs that the massive international effort to combat Ebola in West Africa is working. Since September, when President Obama announced a major increase in the U.S. effort and personally encouraged fellow world leaders to do so too, diplomats and doctors, soldiers and supply experts, health workers and humanitarian specialists have worked side by side to turn the tide. Now, according to the World Health Organization, the Ebola case incidence is declined to much lower levels in Liberia and is showing signs of leveling off in Sierra Leone. But much more must be done. This effort will not be complete until there are no more active Ebola cases in Africa. While President Obama's foremost priority is American public health, this necessarily means ending the Ebola outbreak at its source, in Africa. This is why the U.S. Congress recently approved $5.4 billion in emergency funding to fight the Ebola outbreak. The funding will support the work of infection control specialists from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, disaster relief workers from the U.S. Agency for International Development, and health security specialists from the Department of Defense and the State Department, who are working in concert to combat this outbreak. The money supports a wide range of urgent needs, including the acquisition of personal protective equipment, medical and non-medical management of Ebola treatment units, infection control, contact tracing, laboratory capacity, disease surveillance, burial teams, biosecurity and biosafety activities, and the testing and development of new vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics. The U.S. is also focused on identifying innovative approaches to bring the full range of resources to bear against the crisis. We have identified and obtained funding, for example, for a project by the International Atomic Energy Agency that will improve and streamline efforts to diagnose the Ebola virus in a demonstration of one of the many peaceful uses of nuclear technology. The project will provide high-quality training and equipment based on nuclear science to teams of virologists in 11 African countries. They include Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, Liberia, Mali, Mauritania, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, Sierra Leone, South Africa, and Uganda. This will help these specialists more quickly and safely diagnose Ebola and other emerging diseases too. The project is one component of a scaled-up international response that is working to end the epidemic and promote long-term health security that will keep us all safe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In sports news, the 30th edition of the Africa Cup of Nations rolls into life in Equatorial Guinea tomorrow, but without the Zimbabwe Warriors. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us about the mood in Zimbabwe in the wake of the Warriors' absence.
There is a lot of excitement among Zimbabweans about the football extravaganza, with most soccer fans saying they will be glued to their television sets to watch the month-long event. This is despite the fact that the Warriors were eliminated in the preliminary round of the Premier Tournament by a lowly rated Tanzania. The Zimbabwean Football Association disbanded the senior team after the Tanzanian debacle and replaced it with the under-23 squad. The Young Warriors are using all senior national team assignments to prepare for the 2016 Olympic Game qualifiers. The squad is being built as the future Warriors with the aim of qualifying for the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations and the 2018 World Cup. For now, some Zimbabweans now survive on football betting as there are no jobs to talk of in the country, and the absence of the Warriors has deprived them of the opportunity to place their bets on their own team. However, the Warriors fans are still looking forward to the Africa Cup of Nations finals with keen anticipation. The Zimbabweans are hoping that one of the two Southern African nations, South Africa, and 2012 champion Zambia, win the Africa Football Festival. Former Zimbabwe Warriors goalkeeper coach Nkululeko Dlamini believes that Southern African teams are now a force to reckon with.
Our Southern African countries, I'm tipping them for the better.
While the decision to back the Southern African teams is unanimous, some, though, have a soft spot for Congo and the Democratic Republic of Congo, which they believe are also close to Zimbabwe. Caps United supporter Stanford Kajiti is supporting Zambia, saying they are a perfect representative of the Warriors at the 16-team tournament. The president of the Zimbabwe Kickboxing Association, Tony Kamangira, says he will be supporting Bafana Bafana.
Can also rally behind also South Africa.
While most soccer fans in the country and the region are backing their own teams, there are others who think that one of the West African giants, Cameroon, Senegal, Ghana, and the Ivory Coast, will win the trophy that symbolizes continental football supremacy. The Ivorians, who will be without Didier Drogba this time around, still have a galaxy of stars scattered all over Europe, the most popular being Yaya Toure of Manchester City in England. They have been favorites for the last four tournaments, but sadly have come short losing in the finals on two occasions. It would be folly to underestimate the overall strength and team spirit of Africa's top-ranked team, Algeria, who performed very brilliantly at the 2014 World Cup. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thank you, Michael Junga. Just to remind our listeners to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Blessing and Gibbs will speak with you, the listeners and experts, about the Africa Cup of Nations finals.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318. So we can call you back from our studios.
Now we recap today's top stories.
President Robert Mugabe is expected any time in the country from his holiday in the Far East, and party insiders are warning of another cabinet shakeup and crackdown on his opponents.
MDC founding president Morgan Tsvangirai is expected to hold a meeting with provincial party members in Harare tomorrow to discuss issues affecting the country.
And acting environmental minister Walter Mzembe invites a James Bond star to Zimbabwe following his discontent over baby elephants exports.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.